God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Bonjour, mon nom est Carmen, je suis neutrement juste compulsive. Mon Dieu, donnez-moi la sérénité d'accepter les choses que je ne peux changer, le courage de changer les choses que je peux, et la sagesse d'en connaître la différence.
Thank you. Wow, I hope everyone is having a great convention, as we said. I would like to ask Vasilisa, who are you interpreting now? Or is Louise interpreting now? Vasilisa, could you raise your hand, please? So we bring you to the top of the window. I'm going to listen in French and you can tell me who's interpreting now.
She can't raise her hand as she's a co-host, so I'm going to remove her as a co-host.
Okay.
Oh, I can't do that. David, you have to do that.
I can do that.
Thank you.
She can't raise her hand. There you go. La voila. All right. So you can unpin us or unspotlight us and spotlight our wonderful speaker. We're very happy to have from Mississauga, Ontario, Crystal. Welcome, Crystal.
Oh, sorry, am I starting now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I thought there was more. All right. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Crystal P. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada, or Mississauga. What I'm about to share with you today is, I always say this, it's not my story, you know, because my story would have been the story of a 30-year-old girl with a lot of potential, and a whole life ahead of her that died at the age of 30. What I'm sharing with you today is the story of what God has done for me. You know, there's no reason for me to be alive today except for the grace of God and the gift of these steps. You know, the first time that I was asked to speak, I was very excited, and I went over to my sponsor and I said, you know, I'm so excited, you know, they've asked me to speak. And she said, okay, that's great. You know, what does the big book tell you that you should do when you're asked to speak? And I said, oh, I know. It's on page 58. We're supposed to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And my sponsor said, no, that's not what it says. And I was like, I'm sure that's what it says. And she had me open up the book and read it one more time. And she was right. It said, I'm asked to share what I was like, what happened, and what I am like now. Not what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. Because I have spent my whole life thinking that the problem was it. Something out there, if it could just be fixed, then everything else would be fine. And what I've come to find in working these steps is that the problem is in me. And until things get fixed in here, it doesn't matter what happens outside with it, nothing else will change until the problem is fixed right here. So let me tell you what I was like before I joined program. First of all, I was 250 pounds. I'm only 5 feet tall, so that's actually a lot of weight. I'm going to share my screen so you can see what I used to look like. Okay, just wanted to confirm that you can see my screen. Okay, thank you. So you can see a bit of what I used to look like. I didn't have pictures very close to before I came to program because I didn't want any pictures. That's the closest I could get. I was 250 pounds on a 5 feet tall person. It caused so many health problems. I was in the ER constantly. Doctors were looking at me like, we don't know what to do with you. We can't fix anything because it's all related to your weight, and you're going to die if something doesn't change, and there's nothing we can do to help you. You know, I had gotten to the point where I was just binging every single day. I didn't even make promises. Like, there wasn't even that, you know, Monday morning, I'm going to start again, I'm going to do the diet. I didn't make any promises. I woke up every morning deciding I'm going to eat today on Monday. Then I'm going to eat on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I made a decision that I was going to eat, and I followed through with that every single day of the week. Food was never even loud for me. Like, there was no need for food to be loud. It would just whisper. Every time I would come home from work, I would be in the car, and there was just a small voice, really soft, that would be like, you know what would be really great? You could go get Wendy's and Baskin Robbins, you know? And that's all I needed. I knew I was going to end up there anyways. Why fight it? You know?
Crystal?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you take us off screen share?
Oh, sure.
Please. And the interpreters ask that you go a little more slowly. Now you'll be able to see her when she does this.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Vasilisa. All right. So that was what I was like physically and with the food. Emotionally, I was so full of fear. I was really like a three-year-old girl inside of a 30-year-old woman's body, hoping and praying every day that nobody figured out that I was only 3 years old. I had no ability to face life at all. I was just afraid of everything. I couldn't even tell you what specific thing I was afraid of. Fear was just like a hum in the back of my mind and in my soul, you know, and I had no relationships at all. I took hostages. Everyone in my life was a hostage. I controlled them all. And the threat that hung over every single person in my life was either you behave in a way that makes me feel safe or I will self-destruct. That was the threat over everybody in my life. I tried to fix everyone, and everybody had a job, a specific job, to make me feel safe. Those are not relationships. Those are hostages. Spiritually, I was probably the most religious person you have ever met. I was in church all the time. My family and friends, including my parents, would come to me and say, "Crystal, could you please pray for us?" I have given talks to 18,000 people about my faith. And I was pretty sure I was becoming a nun. I was just like two steps away from being canonized Saint Crystal. Like, everybody knew I was Mother Teresa already, you know? But the truth is, it was actually quite a shock when I came into program and I realized that I actually had no relationship with God. Because I said I believed in God, I prayed to God, but the only real God in my life was me, you know? I had no real relationship. And the image that I had of God, which was really me, was so horrible. I was just a horrible, horrible God, just terrible. You know, the things that I believed about God were that God withholds things from me, that if I like something too much and God figures it out that I like it, he'll take it away from me. I was constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, can you imagine anytime anything good happened to me, I could never enjoy it because I was waiting. When's the disaster coming? Just around the corner. You know, I believe that God was careless with me. He really didn't care about the things that were important to me. He didn't care about keeping me safe. So I had better protect myself. You know, no wonder I needed 100+ extra pounds between me and the world. No wonder I needed the food so desperately, because if that was what I believed about God, then no wonder I had, like, food was my only solution to life. It was the only thing that made everything just, okay, I'm going to be okay, you know, because it would just make me numb to everything that was going on. So what happened to me? What happened was, first, I got a new family doctor and I went to see her. And I knew there was the lecture coming, you know, you're too overweight, you're going to die soon. And, you know, the usual spiel that every doctor has given me since I was 5. And this doctor is no different, except she pulled out the BMI chart, you know, that horrible, horrible chart. And she says to me, "Crystal, you're not on the chart anymore. You're only 5 feet tall and you are so obese that you're not even on my chart. If you lose 100 pounds, you will be in the obese category." And I remember being so shocked and just being like, wow, okay, you know? And I remember she said, if you don't lose 100 pounds, you're really not going to live long because you're in the ER way more times than you should be or that anyone ever should be. And I said to her, okay, you know, I'm going to pull out the diets. I'm going to, you know, go back to the gym and, you know, tell me what to eat. I'll try again, you know, for the 15th billionth time, I'll try again, you know? And she said, don't bother. Nobody has ever lost over 100 pounds and kept it off for a long period of time. You need to do the bariatric surgery. And I remember, first of all, just being so shocked that my doctor didn't even, like, she didn't think I could actually lose the weight, that she thought I had to be surgically altered just to stop eating food. That really shocked me. But more importantly, I went home and I just Googled bariatric surgery. So just to be clear, I know nothing about the bariatric surgery other than the results of one Google search. And all I saw was the fact that you had to eat cottage cheese after the surgery. And I was like, hell no, absolutely not. I don't care what happens to me. I'm not eating cottage cheese. So thank you, God. I didn't do the surgery for that ridiculous reason, but I didn't know what else to do. And that summer I was in France with my best friend. And we were sitting at a French cafe and I was eating bread and butter because that's what you do in France. And my friend looks at me and she knew what my doctor had said to me. And she knew that I had to do something, no idea what I was going to do. But she looked at me and she said, you know, I guess that's the last time you'll get to eat bread and butter. So you better enjoy it now, you know? And I remember inside me, you couldn't even see it on my face, but inside I made a decision and it was, no, I don't care what happens. I will eat what I want to eat and I will die doing it. I've never made that kind of decision before, but it was a clear decision. I will die eating the food I want to eat. I'll pretend that I'm changing for everyone else, but I will eat what I want to eat. And if that means I die at 32, so be it. I don't know if you've ever made one of those like food decisions, but when I make one of those decisions, I follow through because this wall goes up around me and nothing touches that decision. I don't care if you show me crying babies, people dying. If I've decided I'm going to eat, I'll eat. And the next day I was at this place of pilgrimage and, you know, I was lighting candles and praying. And I remember thinking to myself, that was a really important decision that you made. You should probably confirm that that's, you know, what you're going to do. Sorry. And in that moment, there's no other way for me to explain this, but that decision was gone. That conviction of mine was just gone. And, you know, I stood there and I said to God, like, I know this is you and I know you've taken this decision away, but you need to come and give me a solution because I have none. You know, I've tried the doctor-assisted diets. I've tried the gym. I've tried the apps. I've tried just plain starving myself. I've tried everything there is. Nothing works. So you need to give me a solution. If you don't want me to die, you need to step in here. And I came back from France and my best friend calls me up and she tells me she was watching this show on Netflix called This Is Us. And there's a girl in that show who's in a food addiction program. And she was intrigued by it. She Googled it and found out that there's something called Overeaters Anonymous in Mississauga. And she said, you know, please don't be mad at me. If you want, I'll come with you to the meeting. Because if anyone called me with any kind of weight loss solution, it's just like, not interested, you know? And for the first time, I was like, okay, I'll go, you know? And then obviously I procrastinated for 3 or 4 months. And then I actually showed up to my first meeting, you know? And it was the smallest meeting ever. There was 3 people, apart from myself, 2 other newcomers, 1 person and me in this dingy church basement. You know, but for the first time, somebody knew what was wrong with me. Nobody ever knew what was wrong with me. Why was I eating so much? Why couldn't I stop? Everyone knew the symptoms. Everyone knew the Band-Aid solution, but nobody knew the problem. And for the first time, I heard the problem, that I have an allergy of the body, that when I put even 1 ounce of my alcoholic foods, I do my alcoholic behaviors, it's like poison to me. Like it just sets me off and there is no stopping me. I have no more say as to how much more I am going to put in my body. And I have something wrong with my mind where I can't trust my mind. My mind will tell me things that are actually flat out wrong and fatal to me. And I will just believe it and do it. That is terrifying, terrifying, you know? So I was like, okay, I'm in, you know? And I got a sponsor and I put down some of the food and then I started to play around, you know? I just did the things that I like to do, not the things I didn't want to do. My sponsor would tell me to do things and I'd be like, you know, of the three things, I'll do one out of the three. Or, you know, she's asking me to do these things to get to this outcome. And I can get to that same outcome this way. So I'll do it my way, you know, or excellent three things. I'm going to do them all just tomorrow. Today is just not the right day to do them, but tomorrow for sure. You know, I played all of those games until finally my sponsor said to me, you know, Crystal, if you're not ready to work the steps, that's okay. You know, but I have to work with somebody who is. And that shocked me because I've been an overachiever my whole life and you don't fire me, I fire you. You know, like I was just like, I'm sorry, what? And I remember calling my best friend up and saying, you know, like what does this woman want from me? Can't she see like I'm doing my best? Like I'm learning to cook for the first time. Like I'm actually planning my meals. Like I have 60 days, 90 days. You know, what does she want from me? And my best friend said, you know, Crystal, what is she asking you to do? Isn't she just asking you to like show up to some meetings and do some writing on steps? And can't you just do that? And I remember for the first time, I was like, okay. And I remember, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, I just knew I didn't want to lose my sponsor. I just knew that if I lose her, I will leave the program and I won't come back. And something in me knew that that was fatal. You know, so I decided to get serious. And I put down all the food behaviors and all my food quantities. And when I did that, I got desperate. Now there was nothing standing between me and life. And it was like I was a peach. Every tiny thing hurt and bruised and just like I had, like it was just not good. So it was just now like, give me some solution. Give me instructions. Like, tell me what to do because I can't do this, you know? And so the second thing I did was I started to just follow instructions. You know, I came up with a slogan that was just for me. I'm very proud of it. And I'm a good church girl. I never swear. This is the only time I swore in my head. I wouldn't even swear out loud. But this is my slogan. Whenever my sponsor would tell me to do something, my first reaction was always, that's stupid. Like, I obviously have a better way to do this. And my slogan was, just get it the F done. Nobody asked you if it was a good idea. Nobody asked you if it was going to work. Nobody asked you if you like it. Just get it done. After that, you can figure out if it was a great idea. After that, you can debate it. And the only question I asked my sponsor or asked myself when my sponsor gave me instructions were the instructions clear? If the instructions were clear, just get it done. If they're not, ask to make them clear. That was it. I just started following instructions. I fired my mind completely. My mind no longer had a job in this program. I just got things done. The third thing I did was I started to focus on the big book. I for me, honestly, initially I was using the OA literature and it just didn't work for me. It got me to a place of being stuck. I was too sick for that. I needed the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that has worked for millions of other alcoholics since the 1930s. That's the only solution that worked for me. That was how sick I was, you know, and I started to work with a sponsor who worked out of the Big Book, and I started to listen to the Vision for You meetings that happen every morning at 7 a.m. And that changed me completely. I started to build this fire for program, this like insatiable, like give me more, you know, and I started to work the steps, not just the tools. You know, I used to be the queen of doing the We Care list, showing up to meetings, putting chairs out, like doing service at intergroup, all those things. But I wasn't working the steps. The tools cannot save me. The tools help me to work the steps, but without the steps, I am dead in the water. Because the only thing that saves me is having a power, getting a connection with a power greater than myself who comes into me and completely transforms me into a different human being altogether. Until that happens, I am the same old crystal I was, and that crystal is going to eat because she has no other solution for life. And for me, I work the steps rigorously and honestly. And what that meant, I'll give you a little bit of a sense of what that meant for me. One of the big steps for me was step four. Initially, I had started writing on, you know, there's like 100 or so questions from the 12 and 12 for Overeaters Anonymous, and that didn't work for me. For me, I had to stop doing that, and I had to start writing my step four like it outlines in the big book with four columns. You know, I wrote them by hand because my sponsor told me that when we write by hand, things go from my head to my heart. I had 300 people that I resented. 300. And that, like, 300 people, 80 institutions, and 50 principals that I resented. And I remembered them all of them. And I was angry at all, you know. And so my sponsor said, fine, then write all of them. And I wrote every single day. And there were moments when I thought this would never end. And I know other people do this differently, but this is what I was told to do. And I did it fearlessly and thoroughly. And I'm very grateful because in doing that, I learned a couple of things that were life-changing for me. Number one, in my head, my resentments felt like they were infinite, like they would never end. And even though I had 300, 300 is a finite number. And I realized that they are finite. I will get to the end of them. Second of all, I realized that it would probably have been easier if someone had asked me to write down the list of people I didn't resent. Because, like, I resented almost every single person I ever met. What that tells me is the problem is me. I'm the only common denominator. It can't be that something is wrong with 300 other people and I'm the perfectly fine person. It taught me that I don't know how to do relationships because there isn't one relationship that I was in that I didn't leave without a resentment or feeling guilty about something.
Crystal, you have 15 minutes left.
Thank you very much. And then, you know, in the second column or the third column, when I'm writing how it affects me and I'm writing self-esteem, 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 self-esteem over and over and over, you know, and it's funny because I actually started to abbreviate it and my sponsor said, no, don't write SE, write self-esteem out. And about the 15,000th time that I wrote self-esteem, it dawned on me that, hey, maybe you have a problem with self-esteem here, you know, and about the like thousandth time that I wrote fear, you know, it started to dawn on me. I needed to do that many times for it to sink in. This is the problem, you know? And I started to realize when I wrote down, you know, the fourth column, and I started to realize that I was getting a lot out of these resentments. There was a very good reason I was holding on to them. They were benefiting me a lot. They gave me an out from life. They gave me a reason to eat. They gave me my, like, you know, I didn't have any responsibility to take for anything. I could just sit back and blame everybody else. I was getting a lot out of them, you know? And I also started to realize that the people, because part of my step four was before I even wrote the fourth column, I stopped and I prayed for every single person on the list, the prayer from the big book, the sick man's prayer. And in saying that prayer, I realized that everybody on this list was just like me. At some point in my life, I had done something very similar to what I was upset with them doing to me, you know? And I started to realize those things. And slowly, I started to be willing to let go of these fatal resentments. Step five was life-changing for me. And it's not because I sat and I poured out my heart to my sponsor and I told her my whole life story, because that's not what happened. What happened was I told her what my resentments were, and what she did for me was she pointed out the patterns that I was living my life in. These old beliefs that I had carried into every aspect of my life that were killing me. You know, there were about, for me, there were about 30 to 35 core beliefs that I was applying to all these areas of my life. It was like the same resentment over and over because It was the same pattern that I was living over and over. Some of the core patterns, like some of the very common ones for me, the big ones for me, were that I am a doormat. Everybody uses me. You know, I have no choice. Everybody backs me into a corner and forces me to do things. Second one was I want all the benefits of being an adult, but I don't actually want to put in any of the emotional effort, the physical effort, you know, into actually the responsibility, take on any responsibility to get those benefits. Another huge pattern for me was I could not accept love unless it came in the exact form and package that I thought it should come in. And the other big one was when I do it, it's cute and endearing and I have all these excuses and you should totally understand. When you do it, I will nail you to the wall until I have decided that you've been punished enough. These were the kinds of patterns I had lived my whole life in. And, you know, this wasn't about, you know, me being the bigger person, me forgiving people. It was none of that. This was, am I willing to die for this? Am I willing to give these people the power to kill me because of what I think they have done for me? And I came to find that about 90% of my resentments were imagined and fancied and things that people actually didn't even do to me. In fact, most of the time, it was the opposite. I had harmed them. And it blew my mind. That was the benefit of doing my step five with an experienced, recovered sponsor who was able to point out these patterns to me. Then another life-changing step for me, which I'm sure will shock everyone because it shocked me, was step 6 and 7. Because in the big book, 6 and 7 is what, like 2 paragraphs? And I was so excited because I'm like, boom, boom, boom. Let's read the paragraphs. I'll pray the prayer and let's move on to step 9. You know, I didn't even forget about step 8, you know, and my sponsor said to me, nope, we're going to stay in 6 and 7. You're going to live life now and you're going to actually become willing for God to remove these character defects. Because until these defects are removed and you're willing for them to be removed, you can't make amends. You will hurt people more, you know. And that was horrible because it's like, well, give me something to write. Give me something to do, you know. But no, it was just live life now. And I started to live life and things started happening. You know, I started to, now my eyes are open. I could see my patterns everywhere and I could see the consequences of my patterns. And now they started to affect me. God started putting people in my life that would mirror my patterns to me. So they would do to me what I was doing to others, you know, and it was horrible, horrible just to like see the ugliness of what my patterns look like in somebody else, you know, or to experience the actual consequences of them. And let me tell you, there's a huge difference between saying you are willing for God to remove your defects and actually being willing for God to remove my defects. And the only point at which I was actually willing for God to remove my defects was when they became objectionable to me. I'll give you an example. One of my huge defects is I take people and I put them on a pedestal and I make them into God. And then I do and say whatever I have to do and say to make them like me, including being dishonest. And I did that with somebody who I care about very, very, very much. And she found out that I was being dishonest with her. And she didn't know if she wanted to continue to be in a relationship with me. And it devastated me. The thought that I might lose her because of this dishonesty, you know, and for the first time, it became objectionable to me. And I was willing and for God to remove that defect. And I'm not dishonest with people now. Even if they don't like me because of what I say, it's okay. I won't manipulate them and I won't use them. And I still have people up on pedestals because these things don't, you know, 35 years of patterns don't get taken away in 3.5 years of being in recovery, you know, but it's so much more, it's so much less than what it used to be, you know, and I'm now willing for God to remove this. And then in step 8 and 9, step 9 was huge for me because what I realized, you know, for me, step 9, what I would have wanted step 9 to be is here's my list. Let's go. Like sit down with mom, make the amends, move over to dad, make the amends, move over to my sister, make the amends, call my employer, check, 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 done. Can I go date someone now? That was what I thought step 9 was, you know? And what I came to find is step 9 is not about me at all. It is about making it right for them. It's not about me saying what I need to say to make me feel better. It's about me doing what I need to do to make them feel better. An example was with my mom. You know, I had a huge laundry list of horrible things I had done to her. And I wrote out my amends, you know, like, Mom, I'm so sorry about this time when I made you cry and when I was so inconsiderate and I did this and I did that. And my sponsor said, you know, when you read this, Crystal, imagine being on the receiving end of this. How do you think you'd feel at the end of this conversation? And I was like, ugh, this is depressing, right? Like, I've basically just reminded her of all the most, like, the worst moments of her life, you know? And she was like, instead, let's change this. And my amends to my mom was, Mom, thank you for being the best mom I could have ever asked for. I'm so sorry that I didn't see it and I didn't appreciate the amazing, wise, wonderful, selfless woman you were. I'm so sorry. I want you to know how much I love you. And I remember I did put in a few things like, you know, I'm so sorry for this time, or just one or two. My mom stopped me halfway through and she said, so what are you talking about? We had a wonderful life. You know, you were a wonderful daughter. I couldn't have asked for anything more. And I stopped right there. I had no right to change her memories and take away her beautiful memories and replace them with my ugly ones. If that's how she saw our past, then that's what it'll be. And from now onwards, I live my amends with my mom every single day by loving her. My family is not service. They are not a piece of service. I do for them because I love them with my whole heart. And this is amazing because I used to hate my mom. When I was a kid, I wrote a letter to God asking for a mom who loved me, and she found it. You know, that's what my relationship with my mom was. And this is what the power of this process is.
You have today, 5 minutes left.
Thank you. Today, I live in step 10, 11, and 12. I don't need any templates to do my step 10s because that's what my step 10 is basically steps 4 through 9. And I've spent the last 3 years living in 4 through 9. I don't need a template. I know it by heart. You can wake me up in the middle of the night and I will recite a step 10 for you because I did it so many times in my step 4. I apply the principles to every aspect of my life. Program is not a checklist of actions for me. It's not, you know, I go to a meeting and I, you know, make one call and I do some writing and then I say 5 minutes of prayer. No. Program is how I live and breathe. It's every moment of my life, like inviting God in and saying, I am powerless over this. Please come in and help me. I know you will. I will let you. You know, I bring God into everything. And it's what I've come to find in program is my favorite line in the big book. It's on page 59. And it says, we stood at the turning point and we asked. We don't ask for, you know, I used to always go to God and say, God, is it A or B? You know, tell me, should I go right? Should I go left? You know, and I don't do that anymore. The big book doesn't tell me to do that. It says we stand at the turning point. And we ask God for his protection and care with complete abandon. And what program has taught me to do is to recognize the millions of turning points I have in every single day. Every day I face turning points. I get to choose my way, doing things alone, protecting me, or letting God protect me, asking for his protection and care with complete abandon. Today in my life and relationships, I have real relationships today. And you can see I'm in a normal human body. I mean, I don't know how much of weight I lost. I know my sponsor tells me it's more than 100 pounds. I don't step on a weighing scale. I don't care, honestly. What I do know is that my dad doesn't recognize me. So I feel like that's a pretty significant change. You know, emotionally, I have real relationships today. You know, the best part, you know, I used to be a doormat. I am not a doormat today, but I don't need to draw any lines. I don't need to make any boundaries. My sponsor calls me a welcome mat, you know, like I have an Indian mom and sometimes Indian moms use a lot of guilt to get you to do things, you know, it's okay. It's okay. If my family pushes and they ask me to do things that I don't want to do, it's okay. I'll do it because I love them, not because I'm forced and I can't say no. And, you know, they're manipulating me and I have to draw a boundary and, you know, none of that stuff. I do it because I love them. I am a welcome mat today, not a doormat. And I have real relationships. And for the first time I've never dated anyone my whole life. Food was my lover, my everything. And for the first time, I'm dating someone, which is incredible because I really never thought that would ever happen for me. I'm 35 years old, dating someone for the first time, you know? And spiritually today, this is the biggest transformation ever, is today I have a real relationship with God, real relationship. And I'm so grateful. You know, today I know that God has got me. He has just got me. You know, everything that happens today is his gift to me, you know, and he has given me the gift of abstinence and recovery because he wants me to live fully and abundantly. That is my third step prayer. You know, I remember my first third step prayer was, you know, something to the effect of like, you know, God, please help me today. You know, please remove this defect and that defect and this defect. Please help me to be more useful. Please help me remove this fear from me and help me to do this. And my sponsors, you know, when I was reading to my sponsor, when she was like, you know, it seems like you're making a lot of demands. Don't you think like God already knows what you need and he'll give it to you? You know, instead, why don't you just like, just affirm your faith in him, just thank him. So today my prayer is, you know, God, you are so good to me. You have given me this gift of abstinence because you want me to live fully and abundantly. Because of you, I have a job that I love. I have, you know, a home that feels like a palace. I have, you know, a wonderful sponsor, a loving boyfriend. I have real relationships. I can show up like a real adult in my life. I can do hard things. You know, I can actually be useful to people. You know, I had to actually make amends to the people I tried to help when I was in the disease. And today I'm actually helpful to people, you know, and I'm still learning to trust him. But today I have a God that is madly, madly in love with me. You know, and I say to God, you know, like, I'm going to forget, you know, everything you taught me, I'm going to forget. And he says, don't worry. You know, it's kind of like that Adam Sandler movie, 50 First Dates, where he's dating that girl with amnesia. And every day she wakes up and forgets that she's in love with him. And he has to remind her. That's the God I have. Every day I wake up and I've forgotten that God loves me and he's got my back. And every day he finds a new and more romantic and more beautiful way to remind me and woo me back to him. You know, today, I always used to think that, I'm going to wrap up with this. I always used to think that being, you know, the best program OA person meant you were some kind of Zen, you know, like a Dalai Lama where nothing touches me. Like you can be as annoying as you want and I'll just be serene, you know. And I came to find that it's not true. You know, really living program means that I experience the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows and everything in between, the full human experience. And I do it without self-destructing. And I can do it with a little bit of more grace today than yesterday. You know, like this program didn't just save my life. This program gave me a life worth living, a life that I could have never imagined for myself. I'm so grateful for what God has done for me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Crystal, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Right now it's question time, so please use the Q&A function to ask questions. You can type them in English or French. And remember to use the chat for supportive comments and to put your questions into the Q&A. And right now there is one question we have, and they will flood in, I'm sure. But there is one question about where can I find the sick man's prayer?
Thanks for asking. It's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and where is
page,
my big book?
Page 67.
Thank you.
Because I Googled it.
Thank you. Please don't tell my sponsor I didn't know what page it was on. Yes, it's in the Big Book, page 67. Okay. What I'll also say, sorry, is when I pray the sick man's prayer, something I find very helpful is I pray, God, please give me help me to have, you know, the tolerance, pity, and patience, you know, for this person. And someone taught me how to understand that, which was very helpful. First of all, tolerance doesn't mean like, oh, they're so annoying, but just help me to tolerate them. Just tolerate their stupidity. That's how I used to see it. Tolerance means, God, increase my pain tolerance. I'm like a peach. You know, help me to have more tolerance to life, you know, not to be so sensitive. Pity does not mean to pity and look down on someone. It means to have compassion, to show me how I am just like this person, that we're coming from the same place. And patience means, you know, means God is not done working on this person. just like God is not done working on me. And I found those three things really helpful when I pray the sick man's prayer.
Thank you. Thanks so much. We have a question here because, you're a beacon of hope, the message says, especially for young people. So how do you think OA can extend our program to attract younger people?
My favorite speaker says, the only way I can attract anybody else, young, old, it doesn't matter, recover, recover, recover. All I can do is recover. I have no control over everybody out there. I don't propose to have any kind of strategy on how to make OA better, bigger, reach out to people. What I do know is when I get on the phone with another compulsive overeater, all I have is the recovery God's given me. If I can be a sign of the miracle God can work in me, then that's my only gift I have to offer. That's literally all I have to offer. And honestly, I don't think it matters. My sponsor is over 30 years older than me, and she has the same brain as me. We have literally nothing in common, like externally, nothing in common. And internally, it's like she's in my head. I have no idea how she knows the thoughts I think, you know, word for word. So I don't think it matters if you're young or old. We are compulsive overeaters. We have the same alcoholic brain that a bunch of white men had in 1930s. You know, Bill and Bob, thank you, God. I have no idea how their solution worked for a brown girl in Mississauga in 2021. But thank you, God. I don't think we need any kind of special thing other than just for me to recover today. That's all.
Thanks for that. A lot of good questions are coming in, but one of them I'll pick out is can you share how you sponsor?
Thanks for the question. I sponsor the way my sponsor sponsored me. And I'll be honest, I'm not an experienced sponsor. I've only started sponsoring as of February of this year. So just putting that out there. Right now I'm working with a new sponsee in relapse. And I rely on my sponsor to teach me how to sponsor because I don't know how. I do what my sponsor did, which is I work through the big book as well as the book of the AA 12 and 12. I find those two very helpful because that's what she used with me. The second thing I work with my sponsees to, we put down all the food, you know, before we start working the steps. We identify all the food behaviors and food quantities, and all are down for a couple of days. And then we start working the steps. The other thing is we work the steps fearlessly and thoroughly. The steps are not about writing questions in a book. And when I'm done writing those questions, I'm done with step one. That's not how my sponsor did it. We didn't move to step two until step one is when it sinks into my heart that I'm screwed. That if I don't have a supernatural miraculous solution, I am dead. Until that sinks in, I have not taken step one. Doesn't matter how much I write or talk or go to meetings or do whatever, that's what has to sink in. And that's how she did every step with me. Until it sunk into my heart, we didn't move. And that's how I do it with my sponsees. I hope that's helpful.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Thank you. I will ask more questions. A very simple but difficult question is, what does it mean for you to stay or be spiritually fit?
That's a really great question. For me to be spiritually fit, first of all, the only way to be spiritually fit is to remove everything that blocks me from God and to be connected to God every day. There are four things that block me from God: my selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, and fear. You know, so whenever those crop up, I apply the steps to them every single time. Thank you, Sue. I'll go slower. Sorry about that. So that's the number one thing, is every time it comes up, it doesn't matter how big or small it is, I would put it through the steps and get restored back to sanity with God. So working the steps is how I stay in fit spiritual condition. The other thing I do is I work program tools every single day as well, because they keep me able to work the steps. They help me not to forget who I am. So it means every morning I wake up at 5 o'clock. And I love it, by the way. I used to be the person that would wake up at noon. Nobody in my life believes that I wake up at 5 a.m. and I love it. I wake up at 5 a.m. I get on my knees. I spend a good amount of time with God in prayer. You know, I don't give God 5 minutes. You give a person 5 minutes when you just want to get rid of them. You don't spend 5 minutes with your lover, with the person you're crazy about. you know, you give, I gave God time. Then I call into my vision for you meeting every morning. And I've come to find that that is an essential component for me. I remember, you know, I always call into the meeting, but I remember for a while, about 2 weeks, I spent on the vision for you meeting while surfing through Amazon. And in 2 weeks, I was in a full scale ball of self-pity, not knowing like what happened to my sanity, what happened to my spiritual connection, you know, and the moment I stopped that and just started focusing, it all came back. I was restored to sanity. So God made it very clear to me that this is an essential component of the program for me. And then throughout the day, I bring God into everything. Whenever resentment, self-pity, dishonesty, fear crop up, I pick up the phone, I work the steps on it, I clean it up immediately. I don't wait until the end of the night. Step 10 for me is not at the end of the night, immediately. And then I carry the message every single day, you know, either through through sponsoring, but also I pick up the phone and I call newcomers every day and I have real program calls. These are not, hey, how's your life going? You know, what's been up with your job? And not those kinds of things. I pick up the phone and say, how's program going? How can I be helpful today? You know, anytime someone calls me, it's how can I help today? And then whatever they ask, I share my experience, strength, and hope with it, you know? And by doing that, it helps me to stay spiritually fit. And when I'm not, God has a really good signal for me. My sponsor pointed this out to me, was that whenever I start to feel this overwhelming feeling, usually that's God's indication for me that something's off, you know, and it gets me to go back and look at what's changed. What am I not doing? What am I doing differently? Or is there a resentment that I didn't realize or a dishonesty that's been cropping up that I haven't realized? So that's usually a good indicator for me. And I've come to start to notice it sooner and sooner, because when you start to work the program and you start to work the steps and you feel serenity for the first time, the moment you start to feel off, like you have I have a very low tolerance now for feeling overwhelmed, for feeling anger and that yucky feeling. I have a very, very low tolerance for it now. So the moment it crops up, it's like, give me the steps, please. I don't want to live with this. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We have a newcomer question, and I'll read it off to you. So really talking about how open you are about your addiction to your family, to friends, to colleagues. And they're saying, you know, not that we should care about people's opinions, but how do they react when you tell them, or if you decide to tell them?
That's a really great question. So initially, I told a lot of people. I told my family and I told my friends. And two things. First of all, none of them understood. And what I came to realize, first of all, none of them understood. For them, the best they could understand is a diet. They could not possibly understand my food addiction at all. The reason I told them, I realized later, was that I wanted to put the responsibility of my recovery on them. I wanted them to make it easy for me to be abstinent. Like, how can you offer me to, you know, those foods when you know I can't eat that? You know, why won't you show up to the restaurant on time when you know I have to eat at 6 p.m.? You know, like, oh, like my best friend, really, you're going to eat the ice cream in front of me? You know, I would put the responsibility of my abstinence and recovery on them. And I wanted sympathy. I told my manager as well at work, and I wanted sympathy. I wanted her to feel bad for me and excuse me when I didn't show up to work on time and when I didn't deliver my work on time. You know, I have an addiction and it's so hard and I don't have the food anymore. And, you know, it was all of that. That's all it was. And as I started to work the program and the steps and apply these principles to my life, I stopped doing that because that was not a way to live for me anymore. And I stopped telling people because I was not doing it for a good purpose. And today I actually, you know, my family and friends know I'm careful about who I tell, not because it's some big secret. It's not a national secret. Nobody cares about me and my food. You know, it's just, I don't want to put the burden of this on them. They shouldn't have to think about my food ever. They should be able to enjoy whatever they want, whenever they want, and cook whatever they want, however they want, without having to worry about Crystal and her food. You know, that's the only reason I don't tell people. Even at my job, nobody actually knows. I'm in a new job now. Nobody knows that I used to be 250 pounds. They all talk to me like I've always been this size, and it's actually fascinating. It's just a fascinating social experiment of just like, wow, that's what life is like when you're like a, you know, a thin girl all your life. Because they just think I've had the same experiences as them when I have not, you know. And I don't tell them. I don't need to explain my food to anybody. You know, when people, I get invited, listen, I come from an Indian family. The goal of every Indian mom and aunt is to feed you. And if you're not eating, they're not happy, and it's a personal insult to them. So if I can be abstinent through that, it's very hard to find another situation where you can't. But whenever I go places and people are like, oh, you know, here, have this, have that. You know, I don't explain. I don't go over, you know, I don't eat sugar and I don't eat this and I don't eat that. It's none of their business. And why should they care? You know, they don't. Instead, it's just like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. You know, I'm okay. Thanks. I'm really fine. Thank you. I'm so full. Thank you so much. That's it. You know, or just no, thank you. That's it. And if they keep going on, thank you so much. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. You're such a good host. You're so kind. But like, thank you. I'm okay. You know, that's all. And all they want is to be feel like a good host. That's all. They don't really care what I eat or don't eat. You know, I hope that helps.
Sounds like you speak from experience. I can relate. Don't have a lot of time left, but I'll finish off with one more question about handling, you know, I might call them emotions, like how do you handle fear, anxiety, depression, things like that?
That is an amazing question. Thank you so much, because that was literally my the last 3.5 years, but really this last week. I think I told you I'm dating for the first time. I am terrified all the time, you know, because I will find a reason to be afraid because I don't know how else to live. And I feel really strong emotions. That's just who I am. You know, I feel the highest of the highs. When I'm happy, I'm really, really happy. When I'm afraid, I'm really, really afraid. And actually just this past, you know, Thursday, Friday, I was in complete fear. I was in crisis. Like my life is coming to an end. And just want to be clear, there was actually no problem at all. Like there was literally nothing wrong with my life. Everything was amazing. I had an amazing job. But I was completely convinced that I was going to lose my boyfriend, and that was it. My whole life was going to end and all of this stuff. And literally there was nothing wrong at all. And it's yucky. It's yucky to feel like that. And I did the work. I did the work around it. And I, you know, spoke to my sponsor, and, you know, here's the thing. The steps are not meant to make it so I don't feel anything. That's, in fact, actually, this is for me. Every morning I write a letter to God from me, and then I pause and I ask God to come in, and then I write a letter back from God to me. And whenever I do that, it's amazing, because whatever comes out in that letter, I could not have told you like 2 minutes before. You know, it's just like, I'm like, what is this stuff that I'm writing? You know, but what God said to me in that letter, because in my letter to God, I'm like, I feel awful. I know there's nothing wrong here, but I can't stop myself from being afraid. I can't stop myself from feeling like I'm in crisis. These thoughts just come in and they take over like a tsunami. And this feeling of fear is so overwhelming. It feels like it's going to suck me in and drown me. You know, and what God said to me is, Crystal, in the letter, God said to me, Crystal, I am not like the food. I won't make you numb. I won't take your feelings away, because you cannot experience any kind of love or be in any kind of real relationship unless you can feel all the feelings, you know, and I want you to have that all. So I'm not like the food, and I won't just stabilize your feelings for you, but two things. I will be with you in that feeling, and I will hold you close. And I will teach you how to handle those feelings, things that people learned when they were 5, 6, 7 years old. I didn't learn because I was using food. I will teach you now, but I'm such a good teacher. I won't throw you in like the Hunger Games and just like do or die, you know, either learn or sink or swim. You know, you are in the safest place to learn, and nothing will harm you. I have got you. Don't be afraid to feel a lot of fear. Don't be afraid to feel yucky feelings. Don't be afraid to cry like you're never going to stop, because I've got you. You are safe. I'm above you. I'm below you. I'm all around you. So you feel sad. You feel scared. I've got you. And you will learn how to feel these feelings. One more thing I'll share is there was a point, about 1 year into recovery, I went on a date, 2 or 3 dates with someone. By the way, when they tell you don't date, you know, in your first year, they're serious. Like, don't do it. It is not worth it. And I broke up with him because he was just not the right man for me. And I was devastated. I broke up with him 1 week, a couple weeks before, 2 weeks before Valentine's Day, which was horrible. And I was just devastated. I'd never experienced heartbreak or pain without any anesthetic like food before. So it was first time of unadulterated pain. And I remember I'd done all my calls. I'd done all the inventory work. It was like 10, 11 p.m. at night. I'm sitting on my couch and I said to God, like, God, you need to do something right now, like right now, because this is too much for me. I can't take it. You need to show up. And in that moment, this is what came to me, and I just did it. I was in my condo, my lights were off, and just these my twinkly lights were on, and I turned on my phone. I put that Elton John song called Your Song. I love that song. And in the middle of my living room, I stood up and I put my arms out like this. I don't know if you can see me, you know, but I slow danced with God in my living room. And I have wall-to-wall windows, so if anybody was looking into my condo, I probably looked crazy, but I know I was not alone. I put my head on God's shoulders, and I rested my head there, and I could feel his heart beating, and I danced, and I cried my eyes out, and I know I was not alone, because for the last 2 weeks, I had barely slept 2 or 3 hours every night, because I was so obsessing and in so much of frustration and fear and pain, and that night, I slept like a baby, you know? So what I have today is a God that meets me exactly where I'm at. You know, it's not some formal God where I can only pray in church. Like, he will dance with me in my living room right now if that's what I need right now. You know, he will speak to me through the radio. Like, there was a moment I remember when I was so fed up of program. I remember I was just like, I'm done. Like, I'm just done. This is too much, God. I gave it my all and I'm done. And I got into my car and I was crying, and a Justin Bieber song came on the radio. And it was, don't you give up now, now, now. I won't give up now, now, now. Let me love you. Let me love you. And I knew it. It was like, oh my gosh, that's God. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'll stay. You know, this is my God. That's how I can experience the highest of the highs and lowest of the lows. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Crystal. We are running out of time. I will do one thing that we've done for our other ones, other speakers, is your phone number is in your name. But if you wish to put your phone number and or email address in the chat, you can do so. And I will pass it over to Kimberly.
Wow. Thank you so much, Crystal. That was just terrific. I hate to close the Q&A session. You really touched my heart. And I have to say, I'm having a great recovery weekend. I feel like everyone is here just to talk to me. So other than that, I'm not self-centered. Guess that'll go on my inventory.